I'm calling the Committee on Seniors and Disabled People together. And I'm opening a public hearing on senior long-term care issues. Now, if anyone wants to come up to the microphone and address the group, please do. This is a good opportunity to do that. Okay. We will get started.
Chair Morissette, Chair Cowan, and members of the committee, of which you're the only one. My name is Joe Vanderveer, and I'm a cross-disability advocate for Oregonians with Disabilities. I'm vice chair of the Multnomah County Disability Services Advisory Council, a member of the Portland Citizens Disability Advisory Committee, and my wife and I serve on the board and committees of our local Center for Independent Living. I'm here today to advocate for the expansion of Oregon Project Independence to include service to younger Oregonians with disabilities. While the level of services that I require, personally, to live in a fully independent and productive life go a good distance beyond what OPI is able to provide, I'm here today to advocate on behalf of Oregonians with less severe disabilities than myself. Those who, unlike myself, are not Medicaid eligible, that still require some assistance to be independent. For someone like myself, our state system of community-based long-term care supports, namely those that are paid for with Medicaid dollars, is truly exemplary, and those services further Oregon's legacy as a national leader in community-based supports that empower people with severe disabilities to live productive and rewarding lives. But the same cannot be said of Oregon's system when it comes to services to support those with lesser disabilities who do not qualify for Medicaid or Medicaid waiver programs. For those with lesser impairments, there are serious gaps in the Oregon system. The consequence of these gaps to a great number of Oregonians with disabilities can be the loss of independence, reduced productivity, or even premature, prolonged, or predominantly unnecessary institutionalization. For the past 35 years, Oregon Project Independence has proven itself to be a program that empowers seniors to remain independent and out of institutions. With very little additional funding, OPI can do the same for younger Oregonians with disabilities and empower them to lead independent and productive lives. In the 2005 session, as you just said a minute ago, the legislature passed SB 870, which age-neutralized OPI and opened the program to younger Oregonians with disabilities as funding allowed. I'm asking you today to please find the extra few dollars to realize that vision. Please fund OPI so that the benefits of this program can begin to reach younger Oregonians with disabilities in the next biennium. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. Why don't you stay right there for just a minute? There is some rebalance money. There's about $30 million of money that stays within the department. At least that's where it is right now. Whether or not that rebalance goes somewhere else remains to be seen. I think Project Independence is very, very high on the list of a lot of the legislators on both sides of the aisle. Unfortunately, people pay lip service to it. And, you know, they say, oh, yeah, that's my favorite program. But when it comes to funding, I can't believe the difficulty that we've had.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's extremely important that you contact your legislators and make sure that they understand. One of the things that happened, the Legislative Fiscal Office actually came out with a recommendation that they take the remaining $440,000 of general fund money out of OPI, actually take it away. Now, the misunderstanding that I think happened in 2005 when the senior tax deferral program became available, and I introduced that bill, and there was absolutely no intention that that be the sole funding source of OPI. Absolutely none. Now, I keep hearing from various ways and means people, the co-chairs, for instance, that, oh, yeah, we don't have to put general fund money into OPI anymore because, you know, we have that rebalance.
Right.
Or not the rebalance, but we have that
deferral.
Money from deferral. Now, getting back to the $440,000, that money has been used to take care of the people who provide the actual services. And if they actually take that money away, then that's less money for the program itself.
Right.
The program is totally, totally underfunded. Now, there is an interesting chart, and I'm sorry I don't have a big screen, but we talk cost avoidance, and to put $253 a month into OPI, first of all, that keeps people out of other, you know, facilities. But the cost savings is $425 if they would have to go into in-home care. It would, in a Del Foster home, it would be a savings of $650 a month. Into assisted living, it would be a cost savings of $700 a month. Into nursing homes, it would be a cost savings of $2,600 a month. If the Project Independence could keep people out of those facilities. Now, obviously, there comes a point where people must go into a facility, but we don't want to go into the highest cost facility, which is the nursing home. We want to do what we can to keep people independent. Now, the bill says we will fund the disabled individuals, younger disabled individuals, and Project Independence is for them as much as it is for the seniors, but we're not doing that yet.
Right.
So now the premise that we're operating on is that we are under the radar screen, and the things above the radar screen have been K-12 funding. That's above the radar screen. State police is above the radar screen. That's what a lot of people focus on. And when they think of the senior disabled community, they, you know, everything is fine, don't know. And somehow that's under. And I think it's up to us to change the thinking. Now, one other thing that I mentioned when we passed this bill today, the first baby boomer who was born 1 minute after the date in 1946 retired on Tuesday.
No, I started receiving.
Thank you. That's what I meant to say. She started receiving Social Security on Tuesday. Now, that is a ripple of the tsunami. Now, a regular tsunami, you get the first wave that wipes everything out. In this tsunami, you get the opposite. You get the little ripple that comes in, and then pretty soon there's another wave, and then pretty soon the big one comes. So we've seen the ripple, the very first little ripple coming in from that one person, and then more and more and more. And the article, the headline was 24% increase in long-term care over a period of time for a variety of reasons. So not only more people, more acuity, more, you know, the cost of inflation and everything is adding up. And then to top it off, the feds are talking about cutting benefits. So that doesn't help any. So anyway, Joe, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mary Lou, are you here? Mary Lou.
Yes, I am.
Oh, Mary's there. There you go. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Yes.
Oh, you don't have that. Too bad.
My name is Mary Lou Boyce. I'm from Lincoln County, and I have a lot of hats that I wear.
Okay.
Starting with having my father need to be a nursing home, which led me to the Ombuds program.
Oh, good.
I stayed in the Ombuds program until last October, 22 years. Okay. I saw the nursing home go from being the only spot and lots of capable people there.
Mm-hmm.
Now I see the nursing home and, frankly, the ones I know, there is nobody in either of those other than the people that are getting therapy and go home who's ever going to need lighter care because we're doing such a good job of screening for those that we screen. But, you know, I know how hard it is to cut the pie. But one of the pieces along with Project Independence is how are we going to get our more isolated seniors who can't drive anymore, or at least shouldn't, into services? Because if you don't have transportation, how do they get the rest of it?
Roger Martin, are you in the room?
I am on the Special Transportation Committee in Lincoln County.
Are you with... Okay, that's an excellent point, and we're going to address that. Would you,
thank you,
introduce yourself? Oh, just stay right there, though.
Okay.
And you introduce yourself, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kelsey Wilson. I'm the executive secretary of the Oregon Transit Association. Roger had to step out of the room for a minute. So would you...
Well, tell us, what do you want to... Roger was going to address our group.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you want to do that?
I certainly can. She can.
No, I want her to stay there, and I want you to respond to how seniors are. What's the transportation situation? Is what her question is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The transportation situation for seniors and people with disabilities is at a critical level. The senior and people with disability population transportation is funded currently by the Special Transportation Fund, and it was it's a 2-cent cigarette tax that goes to it. It's allocated through the Special Transportation Fund providers, and then the money gets allocated. But with the growing senior population and people with disabilities, the funds are not keeping up with the clientele. In 2007, we had a budget note in the Department of Human Services budget that directed DHS and ODOT to look into the situation, to do a needs analysis. We're currently contracting with Portland State University to study the situation, find out what the need is, and look for additional revenue sources, and then come back to the 2009 session with the information and hope to get a significant package passed in 2009 that will help fund these services.
Okay.
And I would say in Lincoln County we're particularly pinched because the money goes to the general population figure when they allocate the amount. And you see, we have a disproportionate number of seniors and disabled in Lincoln County as compared to like Lynn and Vinton, because their total population is so much higher. But see, that hurts us because we have more people to serve and proportionally we get less money.
I guess you can account for the higher population. How do you account for the higher population of senior and disabled in Lincoln County?
Well, I don't know, but they're there.
Well, maybe the people go there to retire, maybe. I don't know.
Some do, but they're not usually the most needy ones.
Yeah.
The loggers back in the woods and so forth that people don't notice very much.
Well, and it's also the employment opportunities on the coast have diminished over the last decade, and so a lot of young people are having no need to make a living. So
Yeah, we've lost good people.
Mr. Chair, I would add that the budget note directs ODOT and DHS to study in both urban and rural communities, but this is certainly a situation that is is affecting our rural communities drastically. People have to go further distances to get the services that they need. And in the urban communities, not that it's the need isn't there, but the providers that provide these services in the urban communities, like the TriMet folks, don't take as big a hit to their budget as the rural providers do when they have to perform these services.
Ms. Chair, also a lot of the timber-dependent rural counties have been helping finance these transportation systems, and their ability to do that is in serious, serious jeopardy.
Right. Plus, we support our services by additional transit fund. And I must say, for example, that Cinda Bruce supports most of those special services through grants that she writes.
Oh.
And now that's not something she told Sir Hung about. I talked to her yesterday about you'd better.
Yeah.
But I happen to know that she's done that and that has helped to support the Dial-A-Ride, for example, and to a large degree. Now, Dial-A-Ride only can serve certain seniors.
Mm-hmm.
Senior Companions also we give them some of our money, but we can't do the whole thing. And they do a great deal of transportation to medical, transportation to the groceries, transportation to this and that. And there's not enough money in the pot for that either.
Okay. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, I know some of you have to leave early. Anyone? Okay, why don't you come up and...
I really wasn't prepared to speak. And then I heard Mary Lou, and I have some numbers that might be able to support
her. Yeah. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Chairman Morissette, Senator Kearse. My name is Suzette Boydston. I am the program director for the Senior Companion Program, serving Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties.
Could you spell your name if you're not signed up?
SUZETTEBOYDSTON.
You're right. Okay. You got that.
Good. Thank you.
And rural Oregon and transportation do not mix.
Mm-hmm.
It's so difficult when you live at the end of an 8-mile gravel driveway in Siletz. You can't physically tolerate Dial-A-Ride, you know, or all your friends are gone and you don't have anyone to call to ask you to go to the grocery, you know, to help you get to the grocery store. And the program, Senior Companion Program, has answered a lot of those questions for over 300 clients this last year in Lynn and Benton, Lincoln counties, for pennies compared to what it would cost normally. And we actually provided almost 175,000 miles of transportation in Lincoln County for pennies compared to what it would normally cost. But it's not just the Senior Companion Program that's helping here. I'd like to applaud all the programs in Lincoln County that sit at the table, the commissioners and the Special Transportation Committee. I mean, we're all pulling our hair out, begging and stealing from Peter and paying Paul, trying to make it work in Lincoln County, but still getting less and less.
What?
Just for figures, when Samaritan first began to sponsor the Senior Companion Program, we received over $25,000 in special transportation funds each year. And now it's $10,000 after begging. Mm-hmm. But there's just not enough to go around as the numbers are increasing. So what I want to say is it's not our program's not the only answer. But our commissioners are also looking at, we need to think about this statewide, because not everyone can access public transportation, and sometimes you can't stay at home anymore if you can't get a ride to get your groceries or go to the bank.
Well,
it's that simple.
I would suggest that you call your representative and have her,
and she knows,
and take you to the store.
No, I think he's going a little farther than that. He's suggesting everyone call me to drive you to
call,
the store.
And she will take care of you.
Okay. I was just told to pick up the gavel.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to call the Subcommittee on Seniors and People with Disabilities as well and offer a brief apology. We're still on the floor, and we will be under a call shortly. Yeah, so that means when we're told we have to go vote.
Yeah. Would you introduce yourself again?
Suzette Boydston, Director of the Senior Companion Program, Lynn Benton in Lincoln Counties.
Yeah.
And Representative Cowan is a great, she's the choir that we're preaching to.
That's okay. You don't have to say anything.
And to be honest with you, just a funny little story. You said call her. Well, she called us because we had seniors in Lincoln County who wanted to be here today.
Oh.
But most people don't drive out of town, and you wouldn't want to. And anyway, so we brought a bus, and that's who's here in the room today.
I can't emphasize enough how important it is for you to be contacting representatives and senators and officials, because they have to hear this over and over and over, because it's becoming more critical and the alternatives are bleak, because if someone really needs help in transportation and a connection and so on, it's a life or death matter.
That's right.
It is a life or death matter, and so it is important.
That's it.
So thank you.
I just wanted to bring some numbers for Mary Lou.
Okay.
And thank you very much for the work you do.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome.
Now, again, anyone else? I do have some people on the list, but if there's anyone who does need to leave early, okay. Oh, would you come up?
Yeah.
Ben?
There was a lady in the front row.
Does that lady seem to be really the woman in the front there?
Do you want to go first?
The woman in the next.
Did you?
Next
were you raising your hand in the front row to speak early?
Yes, I would like to speak, but I'm on the list.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, we're going to get to everyone on the list, but I just some people have to leave.
You have to leave.
I'm going to leave early.
Okay. She's going to leave. We're going to leave, so.
Okay, we're leaving.
How about we work you in right after them?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Thank you and good night.
Now, you're
AARP okay. is here to serve. Right?
Yeah, whether they want to be served or not, just, you know.
Okay. Chairs Cowan and Morissette and Representative Maurer and Senator Cruz. I'm Jerry Cohn, State Director for AARP. We're a modest, small membership organization of about 525,000 members, 39 million members nationwide.
Yeah, we've heard of you.
You've heard of us? You probably received our mail as to
well,
come
I know.
Join.
I know. I was offended when I turned 50 and started getting the mail.
Some of us are more than the first trickle of that tsunami that Senator Morissette has commented on several occasions now. But the fact and reality is that our members represent business leaders. We represent service providers. And basically we're talking also about consumers, families, persons who have parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. We're everywhere. The fact is that this is an issue of concern to all Oregonians, and indeed, while the tsunami is coming, in many ways, the challenge is already here, and we need to face it. So I'm actually going to turn to the two persons to my right, one of whom just did a press event with AARP, Service Employees International Union, the Oregon Healthcare Association, and the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. And she happens to be with Elders in Action. And then also to our far right, Ray Miao, who is the state president, the volunteer leader for AARP here in Oregon. And I think they have a few words to say.
Thank you very much.
My name is Lenore Bion. I'm with Elders in Action, as you were just told. I'm 76 years old. I've been an advocate for about 3 years. I live on $750 a month. So I have a different perspective on some of these issues than people who live on higher budgets and are younger. One of the things that I've seen in the 2 years, 3 years now, that I have done advocacy work is there is an increasing disappearance of funds. Things keep getting cut, and they're below the radar. They're little things that are very big things cumulatively. And so we kind of don't see the real emergency that has developed here. We're in a triage mode. We are no longer treating people as they come in according to need. We are now treating people in an emergency situation. And it is really getting to be a desperate thing. It is an emergency situation. When I was reading all the stuff about calling this particular session of the legislature, well, it isn't really an emergency. Yes, indeed, it is an emergency. Yeah. And this is an emergency that has evolved. Now in the county, I see time after time when I sit in budget meetings, new...
Which county? Where?
Multnomah County. And I'm on CBAC, by the way, Citizens Budget Advisory Committee. And I'm on a lot of other things. You don't become a volunteer and do one thing. You become a volunteer and you do everything to the best of your ability. And I have seen this growing diminution of funds, a growing need, and what... The Senator Morissette said about the fact that we are now in a situation where it's going to cost a terrific amount of money to replace what we are avoiding budgeting. We are avoiding funding right now, and I think OPI is a beautiful example. We have rested on our laurels in the state of Oregon. When I came here, moved here from the east, I was told that Oregon was one of the most progressive states in the union to grow old in, because it was, they had this wonderful thing called Oregon Project Independence. Well, Oregon Project Independence is not serving the people that expected to be served by it. Oregon Project Independence has no statistics to prove this, but the people that are being put in nursing homes that do not belong in nursing homes, I'm sure that there are many hastened deaths because of these inappropriate referrals to nursing homes. We had initially 8 nurses in the county, in Multnomah County, who made the determination for nursing home placement. We were down to 1 last year who made these determinations. Well, you know how many determinations are not made with adequate professional assessment of placement, for placement. And it's just become a real crisis situation. We cannot evade the reality. And this, if this is a little wave, oh boy, we are really in for a deluge. And we better do something, and we better do something right now.
Mr. Chair, I'd point out, I could identify, when you're right, we do have an emergency. I could identify about 3 or 4 emergencies facing the state right now. Unfortunately, we aren't here to deal with any of them, and that's the unfortunate part.
Well, addressing that, I have, in the years that I've done this, I have seen a kind of pitting against each other of the needs of the young, of the needs of education, and the needs of the elderly and the disabled populations. Mm-hmm. To me, this is unconscionable in a country like ours, that we have to pit one area of human experience and human need against another area of human experience and human need. We really ought to be able to do a better job than this.
Representative Maurer, during the last session when we had our meetings, mentioned, you know, the number of seniors who vote as opposed to other, you were telling that story, and I think that prompted us all to understand that we are a powerful voting bloc, but we don't always exercise our power in the right way, and part of our effort to change that is with SEIU and AARP and the association that deals with the nursing homes and so on. I mean, we're going to make a concerted effort. They are going to make a concerted effort during election cycles as well to get the word out and let people know that it's important that they become involved. Now, I think that we I think our presence here will make a difference in terms of what happens. I mean, the Ways and Means Committee will make the decision rather than the emergency board, and that's part of the reasons for annual sessions. And so the legislature will, I would like to see us meet 4 months in 1 year and 2 months in another year, and so we can do the people's business on an ongoing basis. So I think that we, you know, we need to be here, and I think our presence right now, the Ways and Means process is going on, and that's where the decisions are going to be made. And these are legislators who are going to make that. I mean, they're representing us while we're here. Anyway, any other comments?
Mr. Chair, just to say that Ways and Means, I don't think the end result is going to be a whole lot different than E-Board was. SPD is still going to be a net donor to the rest of the human service system, just like they have been.
Yeah.
Not if we can help it.
But you can.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ray. Did you want to?
Yeah. Thank you. I just wanted to. You probably.
Now go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Ray Meow. Uh-huh. I'm a volunteer state president for ARP, and I'm also have the dubious honor of being on the Oregon Health Fund board.
That is a dubious honor.
Dubious honor. Some people say congratulations. I say thank you. So I can understand what it's like to sit on where you're sitting and try and balance everything. When it comes down to money, it's. I always think it's. If we look at money first, then we always lose. We always say, here's the pie. How do we split it up? But we have what in Oregon an executive council for AARP. We set the strategic direction for AARP. We're all volunteers. We go through an intensive interview process to get on the council. And we're at the 30-foot level for the state of Oregon, AARP. We just had a what we call long-term care 101 review for the executive council. And they read to us the preamble to essentially the Seniors and Persons with Disability Act for Oregon. And I just want to read it to you. You probably know it. But for us, hearing it maybe for the first, second, third time, every time I hear this, it's like, wow. We moved, my wife and I moved to Oregon 17 years ago. We suddenly realized we've lived here the longest of any place we've ever lived because it is a great place to live. This is a fantastic, we came from California, not to knock Arnold and all, but when we came here, the whole feeling and the value system in Oregon is different from any place else. I grew up on the East Coast. It's different from the East Coast. It's different from the other states of the West Coast. And why was that? I never really knew. But here, it says, the state shall assure that older citizens and citizens with disabilities retain the right of free choice in planning and managing their lives by increasing the number of options and lifestyles available to older citizens and citizens with disabilities, by aiding older citizens and citizens with disabilities to help themselves, by strengthening the natural support system of family, friends, and neighbors to further self-care and independent living, and by encouraging all programs that seek to maximize self-care and independent living within the mainstream of life. This whole idea of having choice, independence, having dignity as you age, having choice, independence, and dignity if you have disabilities, being able to leave your life as a worthwhile human being. That's what Oregon's about. That's our value system. And if we go back to what we value and we state it, this is what we value, this is what we want to do, then we can set the priorities for where we're going to put our money. If we start with the money first, we just fight each other. But what's really of value to the people of this state? As you said, the boomers are coming. I'm just in front of them. I'm hoping to get out before them, right?
No.
Thank you. I look at this as a golden opportunity for Oregon again, just like with health care reform.
Yeah.
This is our opportunity. When we moved to Oregon, everybody was saying, you know, like, Oregon is a progressive state. You're way out in front.
Yeah. We were.
I think we still are. We still are because we have this set into law, which is not anywhere else. It says, by God, we value people.
Well, I came from a conference, a national conference, and a woman from Massachusetts was talking about the Oregon land.
Oregon.
So I immediately corrected her. But what she was talking about, they have nursing homes. And they don't have the plan. You know, we in the 70s and 80s created a different model. And to me, I guess the adult foster home, you know, we've had experience with our parents in adult foster home, which is extremely good. The assisted living, the residential care, those are all kind of unique in the western part, in Oregon, and a lot of places don't have that. And they're looking at our model. So, yes, we are still the leaders. And then the Project Independence, of course, which came along in the 70s, is still the best thing going. That a lot of it's a non-Medicare, Medicaid alternative, and we got to preserve that and enhance it. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
We moved my mother here from California when she was 91. And the only thing she said to me, I mean, we moved her here because she was burning the pots in her apartment. She was getting forgetful. She wasn't eating. Meals on Wheels was going to her, and she looked at the food and go like, "The food is terrible, but it's a really nice-looking young man that delivers it."
Okay.
Okay, Mom. It does something for you. So we finally said, you're going to have to move with us. And so after a lot of fighting, she did. But first we went to look at facilities in California and talked about the black hole of Calcutta. They all wanted to know, how much money does she have? And I said, when she runs out of money, what happens? They go, we'll give you a week.
Wow.
I said, holy moly. I said, that's not the way it's in Oregon. So we brought her up to Oregon, and we got a really nice assisted living facility for her. A couple of months after she was in there, I was walking through the hallway there, and this young lady stopped me, and she goes, "You're Pearl's dad, you're Pearl's son." I said, "Yes. What has she done?" She said, "No, I'm the ombudsman, and I've just been talking with your mother." And I went, "Oh my God!" So I went up to my mom and said, "You were talking to this young lady." She goes, "Yeah, she's really nice. She wants to know what I think of this place. She wants to know if I'm happy here. She wants to know everything about what I'm doing. She's a really nice lady, and she said she'll be back in a couple of months to talk to me some more and see what." Yeah, well, there's only one of them. So I said, "That's the lady you want to talk to about how is your life doing here? What do you like besides talking to the administrators and the nursing staff and the care staff? She's here to look after you." She goes, "Why does she do that?" I said, "Because they care about you." And she went, "Oh." And she said, "Okay, one thing I want you to know, I never want to go to a nursing home." I said, "Why is that?" She goes, "You die there." I said, "Oh. Why is that, Mom?" She goes, "Everybody I know who's gone there has died." And I said, "Oh." So she said, "I want to stay here as long as I can." She got to the point where she really couldn't stay there because she broke her hip. She needed more medical assistance. And we got her into adult foster care. Until the day she died, she was 1 month short of her 94th birthday. Mm-hmm. She had such good care. I mean, she was looking... In a way, it was great. In a way, it was really bad for her only son. It's really bad when your mom says, "Gee, these people really like me better than you do." Thanks, Mom. That's nice. But I found this place. And she said, "This is great." And now that she's passed away, my sister and our relatives send me emails and call me up and say, "You're the best thing that ever happened to our family because you took care of Mom." And I said, "Well, actually, the way it was set up in the state of Oregon, took care of Mom." But I'm not going to tell my sister that.
Yeah.
You know, I am God's gift to our family. Mm-hmm. But the state of Oregon is God's gift to me at the head of our family. Mm-hmm. And I just say, whatever we can do to get back to those values, remember those values, that we value people who are aging, because if we don't age, we've had it. And people with disabilities.
Mr. Chair, in all likelihood, we will have to disappear, and so I want to make a couple comments because I have an interesting crowd, and I don't want to repeat what I said this morning totally, but I do want to make a couple points. Senator Morissette talked about, you know, the political power of seniors, which is undeniable. And in my district, Josephine County, it clearly is undeniable. And so, you know, it's the political hazard, if you if you don't pay attention, which is fine. I was part of a senior disability caucus, which was formed last session as my first session here, and at the end of that, toward the end of the session, there was a meeting and a bunch of people were in the room, and I said, unless your voice is consistent from, you know, disability to senior, unless you come with a plan, you are always going to be defeated in this process, because this is a political process. And unfortunately, at the end of the day, we do talk about resources. And at the end of the day, the pie usually is only so big and it gets divided up. And no one wants to give up their piece of the pie, which is unfortunate. So I would encourage that come with a plan. And I think, in fact, there's great movement in that direction, and I really appreciate that. And it's not just AARP.
Correct.
It's a number of groups. The undeniable reality in the United States is Medicaid resources are declining, and that everybody is seeing cuts in Medicaid across the country. And that is a fact of life. And Oregon, I think, is positioned a little better than other states to deal with that. That we have some frameworks that are going to allow us not to go in. It's crisis, but not. I'm not quite sure what other states are going to do. And in the review of how we're going to deal with decreasing Medicaid dollars, at some point, you have to determine whether or not federal match, which we always talk about, you know, for in-home care, nursing home care, I'm really not talking about nursing home at the moment, but in-home care, is at what point does the Medicaid match not worth it? Because of the strings that are attached to federal resources that tie our hands to do the things that we know are right for seniors and people with disability. And so I am encouraging the department, and Jean heard this morning, sorry Jean, but encourage the department to reevaluate. And Senator Bates, in fact, we had a conversation yesterday, I believe, about this very thing, that we have got to decide when it's not worth all the bureaucracy and all the hurdles that we create at a federal level, when that money just is not worth it. Clearly, it is worth it at some level. We have to decide. Maybe we aren't there yet, and maybe we don't have the flexibility that we need within the state of Oregon to do what we value in the state of Oregon. Another issue is end of life, is that we in the medical community, that's a field that I'm in, we talk about end of life issues all the time. And it needs to become even more on the senior side and meshing with the healthcare about end-of-life issues. We don't always deal with it the best way. Oregon is still very progressive. And I said this morning, Arizona is probably the only one that is more progressive than Oregon, but Oregon is very good in dealing with end-of-life issues, but we can be better.
Yeah, and I'd like to get a comment.
And two last comments. One is AARP started recruiting me when I hit 40. I'm not quite sure how that worked, but the mail started coming.
You have to get them young.
I guess so. And I just want to say I appreciate the opportunity. You know, this is quite a mess, and this is quite a display. And, you know, the good representative's bill, Representative Callens, and it is her bill because she did the legwork on Senate Bill 1061.
It was her joint effort.
Well, okay. But anyway, I just want to say I really appreciate their hard work, mm-hmm. and, you know, it clearly is going to be supported.
Yeah.
Well, and we don't want to take away the time of folks who came here to testify, but because I might get called away too, I can't resist making a couple of comments. I will keep them much shorter than this morning's comments. But recently there was an Oregonian article with a massive headline that says Oregon is no place to grow old. Now, I'm very pleased with the article itself. It highlighted some huge challenges that we're trying to address, and I appreciate that some recognition was brought to it. The headline did disturb me because Oregon is a leader in the progressive thought that we've put into how we age and how we care for folks. And we can't rest on the laurels of the progressive system that we have. But thank you for your testimony today. It just brings to light that we're going the right direction. And we just need to continue walking that path because we do have the right direction in mind. And I have a similar experience when I go to other states and try to look at their programs, and they just want to ask me what Oregon's doing. I think the two key things that we need to keep in mind as we're talking about this with other folks are cost avoidance. We're trying to do the right thing at the right time in the most cost-effective manner. And I've heard some folks say, I don't want to ever go to a nursing home, or we've heard some challenges in various kinds of testimony. The second piece of that is the appropriate level of care. Helping people to stay healthy and independent in their own homes as long as we can is appropriate. Accepting when the day comes that things are catching on fire and it's not the appropriate place for someone to be, and being able to find the right setting for those individuals is also what we need to do. And accepting that at some point in time there may be a place when a more intensive care setting like in a nursing home is the most appropriate setting. We need to look at quality of care and finding the right workforce and training our people all the way across that spectrum. And we need to be very cautious about not suggesting that any one place is the one place I'd always avoid, but rather that we try to put this in place so that we can do the most appropriate thing at the least cost, because that's what's going to help our system keep going. And that's the comprehensive character of the discussion that we're trying to shape right now, is that we remember there are a whole variety of pieces, and I appreciate the fact that Representative Maurer has brought up end-of-life discussions as well. Former Governor John Kitzhaber's presentation on his Archimedes movement speaks to the fact that and I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, very large percentage of the total health care dollar often goes into the last 2 weeks of one's life. And I think many of us would like to avoid that particular way of, you know, we want to end our lives with respect, compassion, care, pain-free, and not hooked up to expensive medical equipment. And so there are lots of conversations to have, and we're just trying to lay the groundwork for those.
My father-in-law passed away in an adult foster home in the state of Washington. That was probably the very, very best setting. He chose to stop. His system was shutting down. He chose to simply stop eating and wetting of the lips and so on. It wasn't an assisted suicide, but it was simply, my system is shutting down, I choose to die. There were five people in that home. He got the very best of care I can imagine. To me, that made a lasting impression. An adult foster home is a great setting. A hospice. That was a hospice in a sense. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of low cost compared to some others. But you're right. There are a variety of choices that are out there. Jerry.
Just to sum for us, I think we've all kind of the choir here. But starting with dignity, choice, and independence across the lifespan, and I think when we look at lifespan, however long or short that is, that's what we're here in agreement and back to values. I just want to point out, because we have folks grabbing the bus, and I know you all have some on vote call.
Have a safe trip.
We're proud of the fact that, again, among various organizations and individual citizens, in spite of the construction and things going on and dust in the air, hundreds of Oregonians were able to find some time on a Friday to get here. But there are thousands more that, while they couldn't be here, are emailing and contacting you all. Right now, we're focusing short-term in terms of Band-Aid of funding and of planning, which is what 1061 is about. But beyond that, as the challenge you presented to us, Representative Maurer, we will be back. We'll be continuing this as a unified message and looking constructively is how do we push this forward as a society with a single message rather than divide and conquer. So we appreciate the opportunity.
I need to recess the subcommittee. Thank you.
Alan,
videotapes.
Del Torre. Alan Del Torre, did he leave? Paul Cairns. Paul. Okay.
Senator Morissette, for anybody else that, for all of you that are here,
you're on the record.
I thank you for taking time to listen to our concerns. My concern as an adult foster home provider.
Did you introduce yourself?
Just identify yourself for the record.
My name is Paul Cairns. Okay. I am an adult foster home provider in
Save room
Lynn
for
County.
Me, please.
I'm sorry?
Save room for me.
Okay. All right. I'll keep one room available.
Okay, great. Thanks. now, which county did you say?
Lynn.
Lynn County. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
We have two adult foster homes, and we do end-of-life care.
Yeah.
We take care of people with various forms of dementia. As a former nurse, and my wife is a nurse, we take care of people at all acuity levels. We have taken care of people, you know, requiring machines to keep them alive, and as well as people who, you know, don't require a whole lot of care. The acuity levels that adult foster homes attend to are varied, and they run the full spectrum. I know there's a place for all the different types of care within the system, for the nursing homes, for adult foster, for assisted living, and they all have their place. For the adult foster, I believe that very often we provide the most economical method of caring for people. And in end of life, it's not appreciably more expensive than it is, you know, at any other time within a facility like mine. I'd like to see that we're able to continue doing what we do and that more people are able to do what we do. Because the cost increases typically with the acuity level, and that cost very often is in the nursing homes. Those settings are able to care usually for the people at the very top end, the people requiring the most amount of care. Because those costs increase that way, I'd like to see that more training dollars are allocated for us to become trained, for us to become educated and able to take care of people at those higher acuity levels. Because the more that adult foster providers are able to do for their residents, the higher acuity levels that they're able to attend to, the more savings to the taxpayers, to the state of Oregon. I too, you know, commend Oregon, commend you for building a system that is so responsive to the needs of people and also so economical. But we can be yet more economical by training those people who are providing the services, giving them more opportunities to get additional education so that they can provide the better services and so that we can attract more people into the industry. I understand that more and more adult foster providers are dropping out of the system, are leaving. And I know some of the ones who've been at it for years and years and years are no longer doing it just
now,
because they can't afford to.
Let me take this opportunity to ask you about your liability insurance, your homeowner's insurance, and so on and so forth. Is it possible for you to get affordable liability insurance for your adult foster home?
It's difficult.
Very difficult.
It's difficult.
That's been an issue for the last couple of sessions, and I'm still looking for models, and I think Minnesota has a model where the state backs up your insurance policies to allow insurance companies to feel like there is a backup, and I think that's one of the biggest drawbacks for that your particular industry.
Well, we've got some state liability issues we have to deal with as well at this point after the court decision. So it may be able to be dealt with in the same conversation.
Yeah, because that is a problem. And if you don't have, you know, I mean, homeowners insurance can go with liability insurance because, you know, if you can't get one, people say, why should I insure your home if you don't have liability? You know, I mean, it's difficult. But I guess, as I said earlier, I think, to me, the ideal setting would be an adult foster home. To me, that the experience that I've had with, and I have another relative who is now in one in Seattle, who is an Alzheimer's place, and the care there is just absolutely amazing. Of course, she can afford it, so it's a top end kind of thing, and she's not a Medicaid recipient. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, as an aside, when you mentioned liability, we also have a problem with transportation. We are required to transport our residents who are state paid, and because of that, you know, that puts us in a real bind trying to get insurance for our vehicles, because the insurance companies don't want to cover us since we're transporting our residents. So, you know, if there's any way to get to identify us against loss,
that's an interesting point. I guess I would like you to, you know, stay in touch. We need to talk about that as an issue to preserve, you know, the system, that part of the system. Because the larger companies that have the residential care facilities and so on and so forth can afford all those things. But it's a small entrepreneur who is totally dedicated to what they're doing, because you can't do it unless you're dedicated. You're never going to get rich doing that, right?
That's true.
Yeah. And it's a labor of love. And that's why I think it's so nice that people, you know, they become part of your family. You know, and that's... So.
Yeah, just to recap, you know, my principal concern is, you know, obviously there's a lot of things that need to be improved, and the dollars available to do all of the things that we'd all like to have done are just not there. But one of the things that I think is very important and cost effective is to help support us in getting the kind of training opportunities that we need. So that we can do more. And the more that we can do, the more we're able to save the state. The more we're able to prevent our residents from being shipped out to facilities that they don't want to go to. So that's it.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Do you want to get back in?
I'm back.
Tap, tap.
Chair Morissette, Chair Cowan, for the record, my name is Megan Moyer. I'm with the Service Employee International Union. And I'd like to speak on behalf of not just our adult foster care providers, but all our care providers, many of whom are in the room today, and wish to thank both of you for your tremendous leadership on this issue.
All three of us.
Yeah, and Senator Cruz, I do appreciate that. It's
been very helpful.
I think one thing that is heartening about today is the group that has come together, that we have such a great cross-section standing united in one voice. We have advocates, we have seniors, we have management, we have employers, and we have care providers here, all speaking with one voice around how important it is that we take care of the most vulnerable people in our society, and that we do it with the dignity they deserve, that we have the training available so the staff can do it as appropriately as possible. I think one thing that speaks highly about the care providers is that in every contract that they fight for and every time they go to the bargaining unit, they put client care first and foremost. They care about being able to deliver the highest quality care to the people that they serve. And we're proud to be part of this coalition. We're proud to say that we stand up with these other groups and say Oregon is time to take care of seniors and people with disabilities. So thank all three of you for your leadership and the work you're doing on behalf of people with disabilities and seniors. Thank you.
And one of the things that I think you guys have overcome is a huge turnover in staffing, which is still an issue for the developmental and disabled groups, but because there is a turnover that is, you know, it's unfortunate that people... I like the trickle-up theory better than the trickle-down theory, because if you guys can make a living, businesses are going to make a living. You're going to be able to go to Senator Cruz's farm and buy fruit and vegetables and all that expensive stuff that he has for sale, because you have a living wage, right?
We take senior coupons.
There you go. Anyway.
Just to speak for a moment to your point, Senator Morissette, is that we recently have been... We settled our joint contract with nursing homes, and we have a unique partnership agreement with some of the nursing home chains, and one of the operators commented that he was so surprised how positive it had turned out, because, you know, in there is sometimes fear around what's going to happen if your nursing home organizes, and he was speaking positively about the experience. He's like, you know, I have much more happy employees, and I have seen dramatic reduction in turnover, and I think that we've seen incredible strides in home care in the last 6 years around stabilizing that workforce and professionalizing that workforce, and I think that there's a lot to be learned from these previous experiences as we look toward the needs in the future, especially with baby boomers and what we're going to need in a workforce. So I hope that we can use these experiences as a model of how do we get a professionalized workforce that takes pride in their work and can do this kind of work as a career.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm struggling a little as I listen to these presentations, because I'm not sure whether I should be declaring a conflict of interest, but I
because
really do care about the future of care in this state.
What's your conflict of interest?
I may need these people.
That definitely would be potential. So.
Yeah. You may. Well, hopefully you will be. Okay, good. Thank you. Robert Livingston. Lawrence. Excuse me, Bob. Bob Lawrence. And I'm sorry we weren't able to accommodate you yesterday. But,
actually, this may be a better group to be.
Now, why do you have that wild, crazy-looking shirt on?
Well, there's two reasons, Senator.
Yes.
Number one is my goal in life is to have something that looks more extravagant than what you wear, but I couldn't find a tie.
Oh.
But your shirt would be a good tie for this.
Oh, okay.
The other thing this weekend is the National Bird Count for the Audubon Society, so...
You want to look like one, right?
I want to look like one. There's a history on this shirt.
Okay, would you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Bob Lawrence. I'm a member of the Governor's Commission on Senior Services. And my understanding is that you would like to basically just get an overview and an update of what the commission is all about. And I think that's a good place to start. I've done a little research with the help of our staff person, Mark Overbeck. And I think we need to clarify what the role is in regard to the Governor's Commission on Senior Services. So I'd like to read from ORS 410, 320, and 330. Mission statement: the Governor's Commission on Senior Services is dedicated to enhancing and protecting the quality of life for all older Oregonians. That word all is very significant, because we really don't represent any constituency like providers or any of that type of thing. The commission works to ensure that seniors have access to services that provide choice, independence, and dignity. The purpose of the commission, according to ORS 410-320, is to advise and make recommendations on the needs of the elderly to the governor, the Department of Human Services, other governmental entities, and the private sector on how to meet those needs. The Governor's Commission on Senior Services will consist of at least 21 members and will include as voting members only those persons appointed by the Governor as prescribed by ORS 410-320 and legislators appointed by the President of the Senate and by the Speaker of the House as prescribed by ORS 410-330. And we are very delighted, Mr. Chair, to have you and the co-chair on the Governor's Commission. You have come up through the ranks, and we really appreciate it. There's a double-edged sword on that, because the senator that was appointed by the president is always saying, when we say, well, we can't do that, and he says, why not? So this is a challenge to us. And the composition of the commission, when we recruit for people to be on the commission, the first directive that we have, according to ORS, is to go to the AAAs. And request people that have been involved in their communities, have been on advisory councils, have been on advisory councils in the senior centers. Over 75% of the people that are currently on the Governor's Commission on Senior Services came from the AAAs. And this is very important, because we have a different constituency, but we are wedded at the hip with the AAAs and the 410. We are also wedded at the hip with the legislature.
You're using a lot of acronyms there. That
AAA, Area Agency on Aging. What else?
What are the 410?
ORS 410. Yeah.
Oh, that. Oh, okay. The ORS.
I'm sorry.
That you're talking about the ORS.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Because there are some strange initials that.
Mr. Chair,
so we are really I'm sorry.
I found it interesting, of all the people you're supposed to make recommendations to in the ORSs, we aren't one of them. Do you find that interesting?
We do, and
we call on you all the time, but when you were listing them, the legislature wasn't one of the groups you were supposed to make recommendations to. And I find that interesting. And potentially
I may have abbreviated. I may need to do more research.
Okay. Okay.
I think what is happening with the appointment of the senator and the representative is that we have that connection already. The reason why it's really interesting, the perception that people have, and there's some people sitting in the back of the room that think that the Governor's Commission on Senior Services is a state agency, and we are not a state agency. Other people in the public, whenever I bring up the fact that I'm a member of the Governor's Commission on Senior Services, they always say, well, when you get back to Salem and talk to him, please have him make sure he takes care of this. We are in an advisory capacity only, and that's, you know, if we have some advice to give to the governor and to the legislature, it will be well thought out.
Okay, I will make sure, and I have made sure, that the governor's representative for long-term care will definitely attend the meetings, because since I've been there, I have not seen the governor's representative from his
office. We did have Aaron Kelly Seal once.
Okay.
Okay.
I want the new representative
to be there
at every meeting, if possible, because I think that the governor's office, it is not a ceremonial appointment or board. There's got to be that direct link to the governor's office on an ongoing basis.
Let's understand, she's been on the job for I think about 3 weeks now, so we'll get her lined out.
Well, no, I already straightened her out, so she better be there.
Senator Moore said she is scheduled to come to our next meeting in March. So every 2 years we go on retreat in the summer, and we went on retreat in 2006, and we had a very, very good facilitator by the name of Marla Ray. She was just excellent. We had 2 days, very productive days. I was somewhat disappointed because I brought my petition to her to increase the population of largemouth bass in Lake Oswego, because 3 years ago I caught some record-breaking bass, and Marla Ray said, as chairman of the Fish and Wildlife, she would take care of that for me. So what we did was our last trip, we set up our work plan for 2 years, and we have four committees that are working, and the caregiver committee is continuing to work on family caregivers' needs, resources, training, education, respite, and funding. This is one of our top priorities, is the family caregivers. Mental health, we're still working on possibly asking somebody to do a policy option package to create one position that would be a geriatric specialist. When we did our roundtable discussions out in the hinterlands or whenever we went out, we were talking to protective service workers, and they said there's two things that would really, really help them do their job better. One is to have a mental health specialist that specializes in geriatrics. And the other one was to have somebody that was really guardianship, conservatorship. And they said if we had those two good things, it would make our job a lot easier. And so we really are into financial abuse and mental health. Legislative and advocacy, we need to expand our partnerships and legislative remedies for various issues of concern. Governor's Commission went through a little identity crisis, and we got our divorced ourselves from our constituency and our partners, and we've rebuilt that. So we stay with these things. A couple of things that we've done is that we're really actually quite proud of is the Governor's Commission did do the legwork and did do the staff work for the Financial Abuse Coalition with the Attorney General's office, and that has really turned out to be a tremendous asset to the community out there. The Attorney General has been extremely committed to making that goal. And also we met with the governor, and the governor said, please continue with this. This is wonderful. Train the banks. So the banking association got trained. At this point, they are going out to train credit unions.
Now, tell me, you did have a meeting with the governor.
Yeah, we did have a meeting with the governor, yeah. Then we also have something that really came up that was really important was the development of the Everyday Heroes. And this was basically the product of a former commissioner who has not opted for her second term because she wants to devote full time to this. But Everyday Heroes was just a marvelous program. And with the help of 04AD, we've had three...
04AD.
Organization for Area Agency on Aging... Nicole?
Yeah. Disabilities.
And disabilities.
Thank you.
That's not a fair sector. anyway, the Everyday Heroes program is a little bit different than financial abuse because it's focuses on education and prevention and things like that. We have brought in, O4AD has allowed the Attorney General and the Governor's Commission to have the luncheon yearly. It is a marvelous thing. You bring in people that are identified from the different areas that just basically get involved and help people. Those people go back to their communities, and it's a wonderful way to do it, and it will continue. Everyday Heroes is now going to go private nonprofit and is looking for a board of directors and funding. So this was really something that we're very happy with. I wanted to speak yesterday because Barry Donenfeld and O4AD have been extremely, extremely helpful to the Governor's Commission on Senior Services. He has helped us out when we were kind of thinking, well, what are we doing? We don't have much of an impact. And, you know, he came to our meeting and just got us going again. Said, you guys are important. We need you. We have lately have been doing a couple of things that we're looking at. The adult suicide prevention of the Department of Health has run out of money, and so we are partnering with them to see if we can't somehow include them in our field visits.
Include them in what?
Pardon me?
Include them in on...
If we go out in to do field visits, would go with us.
Oh, I see.
So we can enhance that because the commission had a very vital role in the development of the adult assisted suicide prevention program. Mm-hmm. It's another one of those unfunded mandates. As far as the elderly abuse and financial abuse, right now we're looking at models of conservatorship and guardianship in Utah and other models, and we're trying to think about 09. The other thing we're looking at, too, is the money management program in Clackamas County that Easter Seal is providing. And the Easter Seal is thinking about, they would like to go statewide with this, so we may partner with them on that. Let's see, we have... The Archimedes program was, the Governor's Commission did not intentionally step into a firestorm, but we did, when we said that, Governor Kitzhoffer's presentation before the Senate, and we basically, our ad hoc committee on healthcare reform really felt very strongly that you could not do healthcare reform unless you included Medicare and senior needs. And we didn't say that we endorse that idea, but what we said was, let's just take a look at it. Let's not exclude it from that particular thing. The Governor's Commission will be providing testimony. We have been attending committee meetings and participating on panels before the Oregon Health Fund Board to make sure that the senior needs are taken care of. 50-plus dialogue group that we heard from... excuse me, sir.
There's another health care reform program out there that I think probably is more grassroots, and I don't know where that bill is that deals with the medical home model that that you've been involved in.
Senator, it currently is in Ways and Means.
Okay. But that's a model that basically is at the grassroots level, and I think is potentially much more effective than the 50,000 foot level that the other one is at. But I think you need to really take a look at that program.
Okay, thank you, Senator.
Yeah. That.
Recently, we are co-sponsoring
with Clackman.
I'm trying to think of the bill number because I'm just bill number 3614.
Oh, the current bill number, I don't know. It was something 94.
It was 3097. It got moved. It's now...
Oh, okay. Well, but, yeah, and I can get you that, and I think, really, that is something you need to look at.
In Ways and Means, you better look at what you're...
Recently, we co-sponsored with Clackamas County Social Services the 50-plus Dialogue Advisory Board. They're starting on a project that is rather ambitious, but I think it needs to be done. Particularly since 60% of the physicians in the state of Oregon do not accept Medicare, we have a crisis.
We're going to have them come to our committee.
Good. And basically what they want to do is to start out, when they made their presentation before the Governor's Commission, unfortunately Senator Morissette was there. Anyway, they...
Fortunately or unfortunately?
Unfortunately? Did I use the right...
Yeah, you used that unfortunately. Unfortunately.
Anyway, they made the presentation. Dr. Baer, who worked, is a physician, and Janine Dunphy. And they made the presentation, and they said, we want to develop the concept of a registry of people that would accept Medicare. But we're not looking at legislation. And Senator Morris said, why not? And kept after them, and they just sat back. And so they will be coming, and this is an important process.
Yeah, now let me just add to that. Whether or not we go legislation, we need the visibility. We need to discuss the issue, and if we decide legislation is something that's needed, first would be to go to the organizations and see if they could provide timely information for people who are looking for a physician, and that's the problem, because when you get into the Medicare, you're suddenly at an age and people don't, you know, that's not Medicaid, but Medicare, right? They were talking about Medicare.
They were talking about Medicare, yeah.
And
so when they presented it to the Clackamas County Advisory Council, they immediately said, well, you get the registry, but you can't, people will use it up right away. And we said, the response was, that's okay. Then we have something that we can go to Senator Wyden or Senator Smith. This is really critical because when I lost my Medicare physician because he could not stay in business anymore, and he was really a great guy, but he just closed down business. I was at a meeting with Senator Wyden, and I mentioned that to him. He said, well, just call my office. We'll find you a physician. So I don't think they really know what's going on. I could not find a physician in my community. And so we basically, I went and managed care, and I've been very pleased with it. So we've had a busy 2 years. We are really looking forward to 1061. We're very, very disappointed that Senate Bill 1075 got sent to Ways and Means. I mean, that really was disappointing to us. So. But anyway, we'll stay after it because I think it's an important concept that we start to study in mental health.
So. Talk about what is 1075, please, for the sake of it.
That's the mental health task force for the underserved.
Yeah. And that was Jim Davis's. And I
that
had
was
that
Jim Davis's,
bill
yeah.
the last time, and it did go to Ways and Means to die.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
We really like to go out and talk to people because you really find out who's doing the job. You know, we have a system that is hidden. If you take a look at just a minor amount of general funds for the adult companionship program and for the retired senior volunteer program, we're going to go that those things. If we expand those programs, you're talking about getting away from Title 19. And I've said all along, and this SPD just turned white, is we have to divorce ourselves from the codependent relationship with Title 19. Anyway, the long-range planning effort, James Tace, comes to every one of our meetings and gives us the good news and the bad news usually, and his staff are always available to us, always available. It's just really great. We had a wonderful meeting in Lake Oswego with the 50-plus dialogue people. Senator Morissette and Representative Tomei were there. We heard from the people that were actually doing the job. And we haven't stopped. We've taken some of those people in the mental health field, and they've come to us, and we're working with them. We're at this point, we're, as it came up the last time, that we are talking about two meetings in other communities, maybe Ontario and maybe Medford. But with what James is doing with the future planning, we will coordinate with him and the other stakeholders. The last time we went out, the people with disabilities in the mental health community felt left out. Well, we didn't really have that charge, but I think this time they will not be left out. So,
yeah. Senator, may I interrupt?
Sure.
You spurred a question in your comment, and it was Title 19 Medicaid dollars. Is Oregon in federal dollars that we send to Washington, are we a net consumer? Are a net? Well, let me finish the question. Although you added, are we a net consumer of Title 19 dollars, Medicaid dollars, or are we a net donor of Medicaid dollars? And I don't, clearly don't have any, I don't expect you to have the answer to that.
Big picture.
But, I mean, when you talk about divorcing yourself from a program, if we just said, feds, we'll keep our piece of the pie here because we think we can do a better job. That would be.
Well, that was a part of the Archimedes Project was let's not send the money. Let's just keep it here. I mean, big picture was what he was talking about. I don't know about Title 19. Big picture, Oregon is a net donor to the federal government.
Right, and I do know that.
Yeah.
Some of that is clearly defense oriented.
Well, right. Well, there are some states like California who are net recipients of federal dollars.
Well, in Washington.
I think we're getting a little technical here.
Sorry.
I'd like to...
well, wait, time out. technical, yes, but in terms of if you're really going to do health care reform, you know, I think Medicare has to be involved in that.
Mr. Chair, maybe I should clarify my comment. I think we're getting into a little bit of detail that might be difficult for folks that are listening or watching the hearing to follow, but they certainly raise issues that I think it's important for us to pursue and kind of explore, see what we might be able to talk about down the road. So I appreciate the fact that the Governor's Commission is taking a look at some of these things. Thank you.
Well, lastly, Senator Morris said, we have an annual celebration for advocates. And this year we had a luncheon, and we had a Van Houten Award that we usually give to ex-commissioners. And this year it went to a member of the SPD staff, Valerie. And it was just, people were almost taken aback. They were almost crying because she has done so much work on Everyday Heroes. Weekend work and evenings. And she just, you know, it's the first time it ever went to a non-commissioner.
SPD,
and so it really speaks to our relationship with SPD.
SPD so. Is Seniors and People with Disabilities, and you're referring to the division within the Department
yes,
of Services.
Yes, the elderly abuse. So, but they are such dedicated staff that it's just amazing. And they are always available to us to come over. So.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for this opportunity and a beautiful day. Yeah.
And if I could do one brief follow-up on your concerns around the legislation in this session, and since thank you, the Senate passed Senate Bill 1061 by a unanimous vote today.
Right. It's a great carry by the chair.
Yeah, and sure the closer over
and,
here. You know,
so
the finisher,
that's good.
The hammer.
But then we mentioned Senate Bill 1075. Mm-hmm. To get it out here. Which deals with the formation of a mental health task force. And I've had some correspondence from a variety of people via email, and I guess the assurance that I want to offer you as a representative of the Governor's Commission is that if that bill is not successful in this session, and many bills are finding some rough going as we move along, we did at a small step, as part of Senate Bill 1061, we did recognize that there is an issue around the need to explore mental health and addiction services in distinct populations, including the elderly population. And so it's still on that laundry list of things that we will be talking about as we move forward.
Ms. Chair, I'd also state that with both Senators Gordley and Carter on Ways and Means, 1075 may stand a better chance than some down there have actually come.
Well, the tongue lashing that the agency received from Senator Gordley was significant. That you will do that.
Well,
you can do that.
Far be it for me to put odds on anything as to where it is in this particular session. I'm just recognizing the fact that it's being, and actually I think the importance of that comment is that the issue is being addressed in a variety of corners, if you will.
Well, Madam Chair, the Governor's Commission, I just delivered letters to President Courtney and Senator Schrader and Representative Mary Nolan and say this is not a revenue issue. It was not meant to be a revenue issue, so I already delivered that. So.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
See you at the meeting.
Absolutely. Others wishing to testify? Seeing no others wishing to testify, we will stand adjourned. Close the public hearing. Close the session.
And I will close the subcommittee
door.